lazım. Let it be.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to Journeys with JP, with your host, me, JP. Yes, indeed. We are broadcasting live here from Scotland in the Uni of K. Well, I have a guest tonight, I hope, coming all the way from the B of C, from the British of Columbia, or the Columbia of British, over on the West Coast. So I'm just going to try and call her in. Until that time, I hope everybody's fine. Very interesting discussion, like sort of threaded between much argument. There's a lot of conflict going on right now. So let's see if we can find ways of calming things down a little bit, and let's hope that our guest actually answers this call that I'm calling. Hello, good afternoon. Is that Stephanie?
Yes.
Good afternoon. This is JP.
Hello.
This is JP from Journeys with JP. You have arranged to be my guest at this time.
Right now?
Yes, right now. That's May the 25th, I believe. We can reschedule if you like, that's who your husband arranged this with you.
Oh, okay. I don't have it in my schedule for some reason. I have all the other one. Who knows? I guess maybe.
Well, do you have time right now? Just say.
How long is it?
I've got 2 hours, but you can spend as much time as you like. I mean, it's up to you. There are ways of dealing with blank space, but if you would like to join me for at least as long as you'd like, or if you want to take a break and go and get something to drink and calm down, that'll be fine too, and join me in a little while.
Is it a live show?
We are live on the air right now. Yes, indeed.
Right this minute
on Radio Revolution Radio on internet, and on Wall Street Radio on the internet, and all various other places. So.
Well, there's nothing like real live radio.
Nothing like awkward moments to get things moving. Yeah, I guess.
That's okay. It's a good time filler. No, I'm pretty good. I'm at work, but I'll just close my door and hope that nobody comes knocking.
Yeah, well, if they do, you know, we're gonna have there's a break in about 54 minutes time, and you can duck out there, and I can take calls and all sorts of things. But anyway. There's an awkward intro, but there we go. This is Journeys with JP, and my guest tonight is Stephanie Banks. And welcome, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. We've been. I've just had a gorgeous omelette made with my hen's egg, so I'm very, very full of my organic gardenness, and that's very great. So, so how are you doing? So, you kind of called. Called up on my website, and presumably you've been listening to the shows.
I have, yeah. I think I've been spending a lot of time over the last couple of years listening to really anything that I can find that's related to the thing that I'm interested in the most, and you know, it's been quite a journey, and I appreciate the time and effort that people such as yourself are putting into on the radio and giving people like myself a platform to get out and say the things that I think are important to talk about.
Well, it's a very interesting because, you know, you had a very similar introduction to this whole All That Stuff column by using two wheels and a hard surface. My personal journey involved a 60 miles an hour motorbike and a car that was a T-junction, and yours involved a two-wheeled bicycle and a rock face. So that's where things start. So after that, then what happened? And what was the difference? What was the different Stephanie before, and the different Stephanie? Or what was the Stephanie before and the different Stephanie afterwards?
Well, the Stephanie before the bike crash woke up every day and made coffee and got ready to go to work and dropped my son off at school and got groceries after, went home, hung out with friends, and led a nice life. I didn't really want or need for anything, but it wasn't until after my bike crash that I realized that I actually was living quite a superficial life, in the sense that I was just kind of surviving, if that makes any sense. And after my bike accident, I went through a recovery process where it became very clear that I had come back from that experience a completely different person, in the sense that my perspective on life had completely changed. I had a newfound appreciation for not only life here on Earth, but also what exists on the other side of the veil. And during my recovery process, I couldn't really think of what to do with my time, so I decided that I would write. So on the second day of recovering, I pulled out a journal that I had purchased at my son's fundraiser 1 year, and I sat down to write on my deck, and I'm fortunate enough to live in a very peaceful, tranquil part of the world, and I look onto acres and acres of pristine wilderness, so it's very conducive to being able to connect, I guess, for lack of a better word.
A blank canvas, yes.
Complete blank canvas. And so if you can envision, I was sitting on my deck with this beautiful surroundings and a book in my hand and a pen in the other, and contemplating what to write about, and then realized at some point that I had already been writing. And I saw my mom's name signed at the bottom of the last page that I'd been writing. And my mom passed away in 1996 when I was 24 years old. So as soon as I saw her name and realized I'd been writing, I was pretty confused, and I went back and read what I had written, and it turned out that it was a 9-page letter from my mom, and she talked about how, but I had written it, right, so I had channeled this message from her, having never done anything like that before in my life. And I went back and reread this letter, and she talked about how we're in the process of change as a collective consciousness here on the planet. She talks about how we're going through, we're in the middle of very powerful times, and that my door had been closed and now it was open, and to trust myself and trust what I was hearing and to trust in this letter that I had received, and that I now had an open connection to the other side. And so obviously I was pretty, I think as most of us would be, I was pretty astounded and bewildered and shocked and the rest of it. And so I shared that letter with my husband and my son that evening. And then the next morning I woke up with just this incredible urge to sit and write again. So I did. I retraced my steps, and I got myself back into the chair on my deck, and I sat down, and I simply asked if there was anyone else who had anything to say. And at that point, I got another message from someone who introduced themselves as one of my guides. And that was the start of an endless fountain of messages that just kept coming and coming. And I just kept writing and writing. And I was just so amazed at the wisdom that was behind these messages, and yet at the same time I was really confused where they were coming from. And it took took about 3 or 4 months before I really started to kind of come to terms with the fact that I had something in that accident had catapulted me to a different state of being, a different state of awareness, and this new perception of life. And I just felt compelled to start sharing what I was experiencing with those around me, and one thing led to another, and eventually, as I started to share these messages with other people and people started to request messages for themselves, I witnessed lives transform tremendously around me, and I decided alongside my husband that we would compile the book, A Soulful Awakening, and take the sort of the cream of the crop, so to speak, the best messages that I had written from our guides and teachers, and put them into the form of the book, in conjunction with some of my own life stories that were fairly significant in my life. And my hope is that the book is able to transform others and help them shift to a heightened awareness. And the response I'm getting from around the world now has been tremendous, and I think it's doing just that.
So we're looking at obviously life-changing experience, very much, because you've gone from being aware of the third dimension to now your astral dimension. You're seeing past and future events. You're seeing beyond time. You're communicating with someone who is in a different realm but at the same place, instantaneously with no delay. What we call quantum connections with these beings like your mother and these other people. So do they start explaining, have they had any, given you any insights, let's say, on any of the science of it, you know, how it works? Or is it, you know, some people are just not interested in that sort of thing, and so they're not told about that sort of stuff, or they don't ask questions about it. I'm just wondering for my own sake, you know, has that been a line of inquiry, or is it more about what's been going on? Well, what has it been more about for you?
Well, I guess I did inquire about channeling itself, and you know, what the definition of that is, and transmitting messages from the other side, and what that entails, and how much gets filtered through my own vocabulary and my own thought process. And one of the things that I did in the book is I specifically didn't change any words at all in the messages themselves, to avoid any kind of translation on my behalf. So my understanding is that when you transmit something, you're transmitting it as close to the person or the being that you're receiving it from, and then as soon as I change anything, any words, if I manipulate it in any sort of way whatsoever, then it becomes my translation. So for everyone else's sake, I really just wanted people to be able to read these messages and then decipher them for themselves. So I have changed nothing at all. The messages themselves primarily focus on our existence and our lessons that we're here to learn. They talk about ego, judgment, manipulation, fear, love, compassion. Times are changing. We're all one. All sorts of very sort of conceptual ideas, yet at the same time, it's more of an energetic, the messages are more energetic than they are just words that you then think of intellectually, if that makes any sense at all. Like,
the words are symbolic of a larger concept, yes.
Yeah, you just feel it. And something shifts within you, and I can't tell you how many messages, real-time messages from people around the world that will send an email or a text or a comment on my blog page and tell me that, you know, within a couple sentences at somewhere throughout the book in one of these messages, something shifted and they felt it, and all of a sudden they could see their life from a completely different perspective. And that is what true transformation is, and I think that comes from an energetic state. So there's something in the way these messages are delivered that enables that transition within to occur. So they're everyday topics, things that we know, things that we understand conceptually. Judgment, for example, let's just take that. We all know that judgment is bad, but why and how do you avoid that? How do you recognize it? How do you learn to deal with that when you're in the heat of the moment or when something just comes up? Our ego, we all understand to a certain degree what our ego is, but how do we then learn to have a relationship with our ego and to define the role of our ego in order to bring our life into a fuller, more organized fashion, that kind of thing. So the messages are full of tools that help us in everyday life, and really when you think about our lives, you could boil everything down and we end up with a handful of lessons that we're here to learn. And once we start recognizing that, our existence and our meaning behind it completely shifts. And yes, we still carry on and live our regular life and go to work and deal with our kids and all this kind of thing, but we deal with it in a completely different way, and our life becomes expanded and more meaningful, and everything just magically starts to align and work itself out in almost perfect fashion.
Magic and perfect. That sounds good.
Yes. It really does. It really does. And, you know, when you think about your intuition, it'd be interesting, you know, for your listeners out there, people that are listening at this moment, what is intuition to you? What does that mean to you? I just had a conversation, literally, just before you phoned, a client of mine called, and I met with her this morning, and I just happened to mention that in 2012, I suffered from Lyme's disease. It was a passing comment. The conversation carried on no further because it was really just an offshoot of something else we were talking about. And she called me just a few minutes ago, and she said, "Steph, you know, you mentioned earlier that today that you have Lyme disease. Well, I just came back from lunch with a friend, and her husband is suffering tremendously from Lyme disease, and I thought about you." And then I was able to pass on information to my friend, who then can pass it on to her friend. And what is that? That's our intuition. That's her aligning with herself, thinking, "Oh, right, we had this conversation this morning. Intuitively, I'm going to call Steph because she might have something useful for my friend, and who knows, that might be a lifesaver for her." So when I say things start aligning magically, it's when you start listening to your intuition. Something intuitively in me told me to say that comment about Lyme disease. She picked up on it and intuitively called me back, and then now can do what she wants with that information. So it's when we start aligning with ourselves by listening and working with these messages, we become more aligned with ourselves. And then when we're in alignment, we are telling our innate self to tell our intuition that I'm ready. You can line up everything for me and I'll recognize it.
So that's very interesting, Stephanie. So when how badly broke? I just want to whack back to the bike crash, because you know it's a personal, you know, interest, you know, because everybody's got their horror stories, right? And everybody tries to kind of out horrify everybody else. You know, oh my, you know, I had three broken ribs, and you know, my liver was smashed to pieces, you know, all that stuff. So what was your list of things, and how long ago was it, and how have you, and you see, it's all about the healing process, because it's when you learn to heal different parts of you that are broken, you learn some amazing stuff, and you learn about technologies and things like that. I mean, I had to learn about TENS machines because I was in a lot of pain, and I tried those, and they were useless. And eventually, I came to a psychic healer, and that's what took me on this path. That was what started my journey. See what I mean about, you know, two wheels and a piece of metal. So, with two wheels and a rock, what's the story of, you know, what got broken? How long did it take to fix? Did you figure out ways of accelerating that? And how has that affected your modality of being a healer?
Well, the bike accident was in August of 2012, and essentially what happened was I thought that I could just roll over a jump, and what I failed to realize was that there was a 8-foot gap between the takeoff and the landing, so I didn't have enough speed to clear the landing, and I ended up smashing into a rock face on the other side, and then fell into a gully beneath me with my bike landing on top of me. And the result of that accident was a cast on each arm, bruised femur. I'm surprised I didn't break it. I forget the actual word, but the pedal inserted itself into my shin bone. And that was excruciating. I had a full face helmet on, so I didn't have any head injuries, which is amazing because I tend to get concussions every now and then. But that one accident, I actually didn't suffer a concussion, but I had pretty severe whiplash from my head bouncing off the rock wall, and then numerous cuts and scrapes and that kind of thing. The biggest injury were my wrists and my hands. I broke quite a few bones. And when I was in the hospital in Whistler, British Columbia, which is where it happened, I was told that I would be leaving with two casts on my arms, and I begged and I pleaded with the doctor on hand to not cast one arm. I said, I don't care which arm it is, but like, I suffer from claustrophobia to a certain degree, and I just could foresee myself gnawing and tearing at my cast until I got it off, kind of thing. And he was, at first he outrightly said no, and then I think he started to see the panic that was overwhelming me, and he decided that what he would do with my right hand, because there was only two or three bones broken in my hand, he cut the cast open and then tied it with a tensor bandage, giving me instruction that I went about halfway home. I had my husband take it off, and that was my freedom. That one hand was my, I'm right-handed, and that's where I was able to write. I was unable to drive. I was unable to do a whole lot because I was in quite a bit of pain. But what I could do is I could sit and write, and that's where I found my healing, and that's where I discovered this connection to our guides and teachers on the other side. And, you know, part of me wonders to this day, was that a result of the bike crash completely, or was it a combination of the bike crash with the fact that I was now sitting still? And I think that's something that we all tend to forget to do, especially in our busy society here in North America. We go, 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 and very seldom do we stop. And even when we do stop, we're still doing something. In my case, there was really nothing I could do. I don't have TV, so I wasn't into sitting and watching TV. I live in a remote area, so I didn't have neighbors or friends to call to come over and keep me company. I was reliant on entertaining myself, and I didn't have the attention span to read. I was too miserable. I was pretty upset with myself. I run a landscape company. It was the middle of our season. We have 27 employees, and I was unable to go to work. So I found myself really sliding into this state of depression, and I could feel myself heading there, and I thought, maybe if I just start writing, because I've always liked to write, I'll be able to release some of this anger that I'm feeling. So that was my intention behind the writing, and as it turned out, I got a lot more than I expected. But I really do think that the lesson of sitting still is invaluable. I think that it's crucial as human beings that we take that time at some point throughout the day, even if it's just 10 minutes. Like right now, my life is crazy in terms of my workload this time of year, but I still take 10 minutes. That's all I can afford. And I sit quietly, and I find that special spot within myself where it's just peacefulness. And when you do that, you're open to other possibilities. In my case, I was open to this ability to channel, which I think we all are perfectly capable of doing if A, we believe that it's possible, and B, we take the time to find that quiet spot to at least give it a shot.
Indeed. I totally agree. The thing about people who get sick or people who have life-threatening things, the whole reason is to STFU, to stop what you're doing and listen. Because we got this advert on Revolution Radio. I want you to all stop what you're doing and listen. Actually, yes. You know, but to yourself. You know, you stop what you're doing. And I had a bike crash where I had to lay immobile for many weeks. And, you know, as I said, I broke things and I couldn't walk and I couldn't speak. You know, and, oh, this is very interesting, losing the ability to speak. You know, you really start to appreciate everything. Everything and the gift of your voice and the gift of being able to lift a cup that had liquid in it. I could lift a paper cup. That was right at the beginning. I could lift a paper cup, but only if it was empty. I couldn't lift a paper cup that had liquid in it because it was too heavy for me.
Mm-hmm.
You really stop what you're doing and listen, and then you hear you, the real you, and he's like, yeah, oh, all right, that's weird. And it's well, often a battle,
yeah,
isn't it? I mean, for me, it's been a battle.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think for most of us, it is. You know, when there's two battles, when we're injured and we're trying to recover and get through that, and oftentimes I think we're trying to recover as quickly as possible so we can get back to what we were doing before. But if we stop and think for a minute, why am I in this situation? Why did this happen? And I did start to do that, especially when I got this first and second message. I really started to question, why did this bike accident happen? It's got to be more than just some freak random accident that laid me up for a while. There's a reason for this, and the reason was that, well, I later learned through my own channeling, and which I also did a verbal channeling when I had some more information brought to my attention, and through that live channeling and then also my written channeling, it was brought to my attention that I had predetermined, not necessarily the bike accident, but for something to strike me a little bit harder if I hadn't awoken by a certain time in my life. That I had decided coming into this incarnation that I had things to share, things to teach, things to share with the world, ways to live, and if I hadn't done that by a certain time, then I needed to have a wake-up call, and my wake-up call was the bike crash. That was my wake-up call. So, you know, that was another idea I'd only really contemplated a few times in my life, that we actually, in my opinion and from what I've learned, we do predetermine our life here and our path. And I think when we get injured and get sick, it's really about defining why that's happening and looking at it from a positive light. So in my case, I was sliding down this funnel of negativity. I decided to write, and the information I gained brought me back around to, wow, this is pretty amazing. I wouldn't change this for the world. If this hadn't happened, I wouldn't have written this book. I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I wouldn't be able to help the people that I've helped, which is just amazing to me that this is happening. Like, honestly, I can't even really put it into words. If I hadn't been injured, it may not have been happening in this way.
Like an egg, one gets cracked open if one doesn't open for the appropriate time. You know, it's like, come on! So the question in my mind was, as you were speaking, is like, well, what was the Stephanie like beforehand that wouldn't have listened to this stuff? Again, what was it that changed in you?
Well, I think I would have listened to it coming from other people. I'm definitely open-minded, and I grew up with my mom was an extremely intuitive person. My grandfather was as well. I'd actually been to a couple of channelers throughout the course of my life. I was open to it, but it wasn't a focus in my life. I'd never heard of Deepak Chopra or Wayne Dyer, or, you know, these amazing teachers that are out there, they were all new to me. So the difference was is that it opened my eyes to, before I was half asleep. And I think this is true for so many of us. We were sort of half asleep, but something inside of us is just like, it's like a burning desire to answer these questions. Why am I here? What's my purpose? Where do I go when I die? You know, these fundamental questions that from time to time pop into our head, and we kind of think about it a little bit, maybe, you know, sort of dive into that for a short period of time and then get back into our regular, everyday, normal routine without thinking too much more about it. And then maybe another time in our life go through that again. In my particular case, I can't let it go. It's not, I don't want to. I want to continue to learn, continue to teach, continue to share and expand my concepts and my ideas and share what I know. And by no means, you know, do I expect people to take what I'm saying, you know, as the gospel. It's just my experience. It's what I've learned. It's what I'm able to share, and it's my contribution to everyone out there, so that you don't have to go and have a bike accident to get there. You can find transformation within yourself through these messages if that's something you're looking for and if that's something that you're ready for.
So we have what appear to be terrible, awful things that happen. But out of that comes, you know, like the egg becomes cracked and it starts to grow. Or whatever. I still see it just like the planet. See, to me, the planet used to be like an eggshell and has since grown very slowly. And what we call the continent is the harder eggshell under the Pacific. Anyway, long story. long story. But we grow out of some kind of... we're cracked open. And...
Mm-hmm. And once you're cracked open, you can't help but to keep spilling out.
That's right. Actually, if you boil an egg and the shell is cracked, that's what happens. You start spilling out. Imagine that was in a contained space where there was gravity pushing in all around. You'd end up still as a sphere. There's a thought. Mm-hmm. Boil an egg and then crack it. Yeah. Anyway, it's new thought experiment. Sorry, my headphones just come up. Ah, yeah. Meanwhile, back in Canada. So you had the opportunity to kind of stare at space and contemplate the nature of life, the universe, and everything and stuff like that, and couldn't. And you started writing, and then in what form do you receive as like a verbal dictation and you just take it down verbatim? Do they stop? Do they allow you to kind of pause and you know, hang on a second, you know, just look at how to spell that? Or does it come as a torrent? Do you record it? Do you do it on paper? Can you do it on laptop, etc., etc., etc.? You know, what's your means?
Well, my method of receiving is through longhand in a journal, and I can stop and have a sip of tea or coffee or water, or, you know, sometimes something will interrupt me and I can generally just go back to what I was doing and carry on. But for the most part, it's uninterrupted. I try to make sure that when I do sit down to write that I have a period of time where I'm going to be generally uninterrupted. And I literally just sit down and grab a pen and a book and start out with some sort of written gratitude to our guides and teachers, the universe as a whole. I'm a firm believer in that. It's like a peace offering beforehand. And then if I have a specific something that I'd like to talk about, I bring that up. Otherwise, I just ask for a general message. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say today? And then I just start writing, and I don't think about what I'm writing. I'm not really conceptualizing what I'm writing. there's very few, if any, mistakes at all. There's no scratches and scribbling and that kind of thing. It just flows out clean as a whistle until it's done. And then I generally get...
Yeah, I think I've lost you. Hang on, I'm going to call you back, Stephanie. For some reason, I seem to have muted you. Okay, I'm just going to call you all back. Okay. Whatever's happened there. Always happens. Well, welcome back. I'm still on the air. There's some smoke coming through the wind thing, so I'm obviously the wind. Right, so somehow I'm unable to hear you, Stephanie. You seem to be coming through, but maybe you're muted, or maybe I've muted you. I don't think I've muted you. Oh, hang on, yes, something is muted, yes. Oh, what did happen? That's the volume. Unmute. No. Yes, Stephanie? No. No. I'm just going to call back. Okay, so we're back on Revolution Radio. There we go. Right. I'm very sorry.
Hello?
I was very, very sorry. I have a very strange technical issue here, but everything seems back again now. You suddenly went quiet from my end, and something hit a random keyboard, and...
was I boring you?
No. So maybe okay. So basically, you were talking about when you're receiving messages, you have you're talking about using your journal and writing longhand, and then do you transfer it across to a post somewhere? Do you have a website?
Yeah, I transfer some of them to blogs. Some of them are for people in particular that have ordered a message through my website. And then some of them are just for myself, and they just stay in the journal. But what I was saying earlier was that when I was in primary school, we moved from British Columbia to Ontario, and during that move, I missed learning how to handwrite. In Ontario, they had already learned that a year before. In BC, they were behind the times. So I actually learned how to handwrite on my own by following those posters that they had above chalkboards where you could like kind of practice your handwriting. That's how I learned how to write. So I'm a horrible writer. I never do it. It's excruciating to even try to read. Yet some of these messages have come through as the most beautiful handwriting I've ever seen in my life. And the first one I got like that, it was such a huge affirmation to me that this is real. This is not me. I don't write this way. I don't talk this way. I've never heard of some of these ideas before that are being put forth. And the writing in itself is just extraordinary, some of them. And then what I do is I just, if somebody orders a message, what I like to do is I scan it and email it to them so that they can see for themselves the actual writing and how fluid it is. And very seldom is there an interruption. I just start and then I stop when it's done. I get up, I do whatever I need to do until it's time to go back and read it. And then when I reread it, it's almost like reading it for the first time because I'm not really digesting it as I'm writing it. And in that first reading, I almost always have an onset of emotion or I start to sweat. There's just so much energy that goes along with them. So it's it's more than just the words. Like I said before, it's a very energetic form of communicating, yet it's primarily done through handwriting with me.
Very interesting that you get very hot there. Is this one of the signs that when our resident healer, Frank Jordan, starts speaking about things and says, I may feel my hands getting hot, that there is a thermal thing about, well, you know, you're raising your frequency, you can sort of step up the engine, you know. So it's gonna, you're going to run hotter. You know, well, you know, they say people who are, you know, low in intelligence, they say they're cold, you know.
Right.
And, you know, we're all seeking, we're all heat-seeking. Anyway, meanwhile, one of the things that I started out handwriting, you know, with my guidance, but my handwriting, if you think yours is bad, again, I don't want to get into into how bad things are, but my writing, my cursive writing is awful. It just is very strange. And I started doing it on the laptop about 2005. And I found that was a lot easier for me to actually type it. And then I sometimes get to a point when I feel my fingers are kind of, they're being guided very gently. That's a particular frequency band when I, you know, it feels like there's a light that is like a glove that is moving my fingers for me, which it makes it much easier to type. It's like, thank you very much, I'll let go now. You know, if I can be really, really in tune with it.
That's what tends to happen. That's how it all sort of starts.
And yes.
When it stops is when you start thinking, oh, what's going on? Or you start thinking about it too much. It's really quite simple in a sort of complex kind of way, but it's not really complex at all. If you just allow yourself the freedom to just write whatever words come to your mind or whatever words come out of your hands, however it, like, I don't really know how to explain it, but you felt it, and when you feel it, and I'm sure artists feel the same way, musicians, there's so many forms of channeling, and this is another thing I try to empathize with people. Just because I write these channeled messages, you know, doesn't mean that you can't get the same kind of information while you're out in the woods on your snowboard. And all of a sudden you just have these words that come through your mind, or, you know, these little glimpses of something. You know, you don't know who that's necessarily coming from. Just when you start to listen, it's amazing what you're actually capable of hearing or expressing through art or through your laptop, for example. I have a hard time with doing it on the laptop because the spell check always messes me up. It always wants to change the word. So I tend to stick to the longhand, but there's so many different forms of channeling and meditating, and it's about not getting stuck on anything in particular.
Exactly. You could do it really slowly with a chisel and rock, but, you know, things move faster these days. But yeah, I mean, probably, you know, I would imagine, and I'm sure I know one or two people who actually channel directly into a blog, directly onto the web, boom, like that. And there's a musician that I know, Puneet Yatri, lovely guy, beautiful guy, I know him from Edinburgh. He channels music, you know, he plays channeled music over and over and over. He's just, you know, plays some music, rewinds the tape, plays some more, rewinds the tape, different voices every time, and it all just comes out, boom, in one go. No re-practice, no, you know, just boom like that. That's how the masters do it. You know, just boom, one thing after another. And it's when you're tuned in, when you're in the zone, there is no time, only layers. And you understand the layers, and you do one layer at a time, and boom, 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 boom. And that's how you can make a 16-channel recording in, like, half an hour of a 3-minute song, and that's it. Amazing. So,
exactly. That's
how spirit works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think a sort of commonality is to not have any expectations about what you're going to get. Like your friend, the musician, he's probably not thinking ahead of time, okay, this is going to be a masterpiece, and this is going to be my best piece I've ever come up with yet, and it's going to resemble this musician, and, you know, I doubt very highly that he has any preconceived ideas about what's going to come out. He just goes in without any real thought about what's going to come out. He's just going into it. And I tend to do the same. I'm just gonna write. It doesn't really matter what comes out, because if it's useful and valuable, great. And if it's not, well, I'll try another day. But the thing is, every time I sit down to write, it's always useful and valuable and great. But I never do I have an expectation about what I'm going to receive. And I try to emphasize this with people as well when they request a message for themselves. It's fine to ask specific questions and look for answers to things that are troubling in your life or that need some clarification. Yet on the other hand, if you allow yourself to be open to what Spirit has to say, you may receive something even more valuable than your mind can even imagine.
And sometimes it might kick your butt.
Pardon me?
Sometimes it might kick your butt. You know, really surprise you to show you that you're just absolutely going down the wrong road. And, you know, like we're saying, the soul messages for you were very, you know, it was like, she's not listening, let's give her a really big one, like they did to me too. Oh, he's not listening. He's having far too much fun. So we'll put Mr. Ramadan in the way. Bam, oops. Yeah, there you go. That'll show him up. Right. Okay, now, what we wanted to tell you was this. So, and for a lot of people, this is how it happens. You know, now the kettle starts to boil. I have a wood stove and a singing kettle. Oh, God.
Well, we tend to miss the little signs along the way.
Yes.
That's the thing. Like, I don't think I necessarily had to smash into a rock face and go through the pain that went along with that had I been paying attention to the smaller, more subtle signs. Mm-hmm. But I was just too busy being busy that I didn't pick up on the subtle signs that were going on around me, and they're there all the time. It's getting out of our regular routine and looking at every situation that comes into our life just a little bit differently. And I think oftentimes we get so close into our own life that it's like we're looking at it through a macro lens, and all you're seeing are the details right in front of you, but you're not seeing the bigger picture. And what I try to do with my life now is I actually envision myself taking off the macro lens and putting on a wide angle and stepping back a little bit. And every situation that comes forth, looking at it as the big picture, as opposed to just that particular incident that's happening right now, and it may appear that it's negative, and this is a hurdle, this is a hindrance, this is really annoying, it's an irritation, it's something that's going to set me back. No, is it? It doesn't have to be. There's a silver lining in there somewhere. What is it? And then as soon as you take off that lens and put on a bigger one, then you can possibly start to see all angles and really start to expand your horizons and open yourself up to all your potentials. And that's something I think that we forget about, that we are a magnificent expression of endless potential, all of us. What are those potentials?
Exactly. What are those potentials? And how have you discovered them personally?
Through being open and willing and able to experience life from this new vantage point, looking at all my situations, even the most trying situations, and finding the lesson within that situation. And to me, it's all about the lesson. There's always a lesson. There's a lesson in everything. And that doesn't mean that your entire life has to be work. As a matter of fact, it becomes way less work when you look at it that way. Because when you're not looking at every situation as an opportunity for growth, you're simply looking at it as a situation that's either good or bad. And for me personally, when something comes up in my life and I dissect it just a little bit to figure out what the lesson is, what's the lesson in this situation right now for me? How do I grow from this? Then I tend to almost always come from a place of love and compassion, because I don't feel so compelled to come back at whoever seems to be in my way and giving me a hard time, for example, with judgment and aggression, if this is making any sense at all. So let's take my son, for example. He's 12 years old, almost 13. So I feel almost constantly challenged by his mood and his hormones raging and wanting to be a teenager and the trials and tribulations that go along with that. And then I come home from a long day of work and I'm exhausted and I'm tired and I'm hungry. And then if he's giving me grief about something 3 years ago, I probably would have come back at him in the same way with agitation and irritation. Now what I'm able to do, no matter how tired I am, although I still mess up from time to time, but this helps me a lot. What I do is I step back, I take a deep breath, and I think, what am I here to learn? What is in this situation for me? Right now, I need to learn the art of patience, and I need to learn the art of coming from a place of love and compassion, no matter how much he's trying to piss me off right now, and challenge myself to turn that situation around without elevating it. And when you actually are able to do that, the gratification that comes out of that situation is beautiful. And then you can take that and you can apply that same theory to being in a grocery store, waiting in line. Somebody bumps you from behind with the cart. The teller is taking forever because it's her new day. Whatever the situation may be, and you're starting to feel angry and uptight and you feel your body clench up. There's a perfect opportunity right there to challenge yourself to be patient and kind and loving and to try to make somebody else's life that much better. The teller, when you get up to them, they're all flustered and sweaty because everybody's feeling pissed off in the line because, sorry, I've said that word twice now on air. I don't know why I have, but I get that. That's just how I would feel in that situation. So try to make her life better, you know? Send her love. It's okay. It's your first day. We've all been there. You know, take your time, just, you know, blah, 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 we'll be fine. And then all of a sudden you've calmed them down, you've sent them love, they're feeling better, then they can pass that on to the people around you. And everything it's such a more pleasant way of being and existing and living.
it certainly does the world a favor. To not have one more person running around not knowing and panicking. To have one less person who's riffling the waters and one more person who's calming the waters, knowing that that's what you're supposed to do. Knowing what you're supposed to do is a really, really good thing. And often we don't get to know what we're supposed to do unless that egg gets cracked. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the biggest lesson.
We're such a reactionary kind of creature. Like, we tend to react to everything. And really what has transformed my life is learning the difference between reacting and responding. There's a big difference. When you react, you're coming from a place of fear. When you respond, you're coming from a place of love. Reactions almost always are knee-jerk reactions to something that sends you to that place of anger, frustration, control, manipulation. Your ego is kicking into high gear and your defenses come up and it's all about, you become, it's all about me right now. The only thing that matters right now in this particular moment is me. And I'm going to do everything I can to make everyone aware of that. That's a reaction. A response is when you take the time to assess the situation, before you say or do anything. Determine, have a conversation with your mind. Allow your mind and your soul to communicate with one another, and remind your mind that, yes, you're there to protect me, and I appreciate that, and you're there to quantify and analyze the situation, and I get that, and I appreciate that, but my soul also has a say in this, and right now I'm going to choose to come from a place of love, because if I come from a place of fear, it's going to elevate and accentuate the negative situation that's already happening. So we know that. I think we all know that. You get into a heat of an argument, you buy into that, it's going to elevate. It always does. I've never seen it not do that. I was in a relationship for many years, 10 years.
Oh, God. For 10 years, I'm trying to remember.
Was it something I said?
Yeah, probably. Probably an ex-boyfriend. Listen, we're up to a hard break. We'll get back to this in about 5-6 minutes time. Please stand by. I'll call you back just as we're coming back in. Okay, Stephanie. Have a take a break.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Don't go away. Yes, it's us. We're back. No, we're not. It's just me. So now I'm just going to call Stephanie once again. My guest tonight, Stephanie Banks, author and recovery. There we go. Let's see if we can recover from this one. Stephanie, you back with us?
Hello.
Hello. Now, I did put a pin in it, and something like 10 in it. I can't remember what the pin was. 10 years you were in a relationship. You had a 10-year relationship. Yeah, I did it. Yeah, there we go.
Right, right. Yeah, sorry, I think I was just...
That's where the pin was. 10-year relationship. Okay, so over here.
10-year relationship. And we argued a lot. There was a lot of arguing in that relationship, and it was just, it was toxic. And... one of us would start it and the other one would buy into it, and then all of a sudden you have two people just going, you know, head to head, and nobody ever wins. You don't really ever get anywhere, and I kind of learned from that relationship, but not completely. It's really become clear to me in the last 2 years, I guess going on 3 years now, that really the only thing that will extinguish those situations is love. To out-love somebody, to out-love the situation, and to witness it when you do it is just, it's just such a magnificent thing to be able to do, no matter how big or how small the argument, the potential of the argument is, when you can diffuse it by not engaging in it and coming from a completely different place. It's very rewarding, and I encourage everybody to try that tactic and see how it works for you.
That's an interesting thing, yeah. Because I was having a all right. So it came back to something I said earlier on the show, on the previous show, to Steve, my co-host, and I said, when you argue with somebody, you're making a contract. And he said, no, you're not, I'm refusing. I said, yes, you are. No, you're not. Yes, you are. Yeah. Right. And I said, well, by engaging in a conversation with me, you're giving consent. Implicit, because you're engaging. You're buying into it. Literally, you're paying your attention into this conflict. And that's how it goes. And like you say, you know, there's only one end to this, and it always ends the same way.
Yeah, it does, and it's very tiring.
Yeah, and it's contract. It contracts you. It prevents you from doing something that you wanted to do, and which is what you're supposed. The thing that you want to do is the thing you're supposed to be doing. But we find ourselves in relationships and situations that somehow some part of our subconscious has arranged for us to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That these challenges are placed before us in order for us to work out the puzzle that we're given, you know, when we're cracked open. We're a puzzle. We start from something spherical to something that is, you know, a puzzle.
Exactly.
And we bring the pieces back together again. Perhaps in a new way.
And don't be afraid to take a piece out and put it somewhere else if it doesn't fit. See, that's the other thing, and that's something that came to me, excuse me, in a message, was that concept of the puzzle. And, you know, you can force and try to get a piece to fit. You think that it fits there, and no matter how hard you try, it just may not fit. And then if you leave it there and just pretend that that little corner actually does fit in there when it really it doesn't, and you just pretend that it does, and carry on putting your puzzle together, eventually you're going to realize that there's a missing piece. There's a missing piece, or that something's in the wrong place, and that it's okay to acknowledge that and to remove it from your life, and or find another place for it.
Yeah, the world's a big place. Yeah, big globe. Getting bigger. Getting bigger. Bigger by the second.
Getting bigger.
Yeah. So when we're on in this, so then what happened is somehow how did people get to know about what was going on for you, and like starts asking you stuff, you know, why is my life such a failure? When will I get my next girlfriend? You know, that sort of thing. And by the way, no, go on, go ahead. When will I be
well,
rich? When will my twin flame come?
Well, and see, that's the thing, is that those questions they're bigger than that. Like, you have to get to the root of things before those questions really get answered in that light. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's...
Of course I understand,
the questions,
yes.
The questions are bigger than that, and... But it's amazing how when you start looking at the deeper questions, all that stuff just will start to fall into place. That will just automatically come. When you start doing the things that you are passionate about wholeheartedly without any doubt that you can create abundance in your life in every way based around the thing that you're doing that you love the most, abundance will happen. But when you doubt yourself and question that, that's where you create blockages and resistance to allowing the money, the girlfriend, the boyfriend, the whatever it is that you're looking for. You create that boundary and sort of put blockages up that you're not even really aware that you're doing. So getting back to your question, how I sort of came out of the closet kind of thing, it took me a little while, because I wasn't surrounded by, at least I didn't feel like I was surrounded by people that were into that kind of thing. But then again, I had never talked to those around me other than my partner, Steve, and, you know, maybe a few close friends about things of this nature. So, but eventually I just couldn't help myself. I was just so enlightened, and I wanted to share. So I started coming to work, not to work, but I would come into work to see my employees and my coworkers and my brother, who's my business partner, and just kind of be present. And, you know, I couldn't lift or carry or do anything, but over time I was able to drive with my right hand. Once those bones healed a little bit, I could actually drive, or at least be a passenger. And what I would do is I would, like I said earlier, I own a landscape company, so there was, I would hop in the truck with one of my drivers, for example, and we would go to the compost site, or we would go to the brick place to pick up some paving stones or whatever. I would just tag along, and I would bring my journals with me, and I would just start reading to them. I'm like, you gotta listen to this. Like, this is amazing. Like, check this out. And I would start reading these messages to my various employees, and it was actually quite humorous, because there was days when my employees would be rushing around the yard at 7:30 in the morning, getting their trucks and trailers organized and their tools and the whole nine yards, and I'd be literally running around behind them with one-liners, like, listen to this, and they would stop and listen, and what was really interesting is that bringing that into the workplace started to shift the dynamics within the company, and you could feel it. And not only could you feel it, but from a financial standpoint, we experienced it. So being a business owner, I'm one of the highest paid employees within the company, but I also wasn't covered at all for being off of work, nor was I able to draw a wage from an income from my clients because I wasn't obviously working in their yard, so I couldn't be billing them. I was completely unbillable. So myself and my brother were concerned about how this was going to impact our company. Being a small company, a seasonal company, it could have really been detrimental. I was off work for 6 weeks, I think actually 8 weeks in the end. And even then, when I did go back to work, I was still only sort of half capacity. But what happened was the opposite. Our gross revenue went up significantly during that period and continued to go up even when I came back to work. And I think really what happened was that I sort of infused the company with this new light, and that hadn't been there before, or if it was, it was very dim. And people started to think differently about how they talked to each other, how they talked to clients, their work ethic, what they thought about people walking down the streets. Like, I had conversations with a couple of my coworkers. We were in a truck. I was just traveling with two of my girls, and somebody would make a comment about an outfit that somebody was wearing walking down the street. Not really a mean comment, but just one of those little comments, like, oh, what was she wearing? What was she thinking when she put that on today? Things that we all do. We all do this at some point, right? And bringing awareness to that became my responsibility. Okay, you know, that's not really, we really need to start concentrating on not doing those things, not putting that kind of negative energy out there. And it was just those little things, and it really compounded and then transformed the company as a whole. So the money and the abundance comes along with the shift and the transformation that you find within. So when I started witnessing this within my workplace, I then gained some confidence in what was going on. And then my partner, he was working at a mill, and one day he asked me for a message for some guy that he worked with. And I said, well, who is he? And he said, well, you don't really know him. I don't really know him. I just feel like I have a connection with him, and I feel like he could really benefit from this. And I hadn't done a message for anyone in particular other than for myself ever at this point. And I was a little bit apprehensive for obvious reasons. But I was also apprehensive for his sake because he works in a mill, and I thought, well, how open is this guy going to be to the fact that his, you know, girlfriend's channeling a message from his guides? And, you know, I started formulating all these ideas in my head, and then I just kind of kept putting it off. And then one day I was in the shower, and I got this overwhelming urge that I needed to write this guy this message right then and there. So I literally jumped into the shower with shampoo in my hair and proceeded to write a message for this guy. And it ended up being pretty long. It was like 19 pages and something like that. And my partner immediately started typing it into the computer, and he took it into work and asked him if he walked into this guy's office. It was one of his managers, and said, you know, my girlfriend had a bike accident, and she came back a completely different person, and she's able to communicate with her guides and teachers, and I asked her if she would mind asking for a message for you on your behalf. I have no idea where you sit on the whole, you know, at the table of spiritual thought and that kind of thing. And the guy was sitting there with his arms crossed at his desk, and he looked up at Steve and he said, well, you know, I'm one of those guys that I'll believe it when I see it. So why don't you just give me what you got? So Steve proceeded to read this message to the guy, and when he finished, he looked up and his arms were uncrossed and he had tears streaming down his face, And that message completely transformed his way of life. He developed new patterns within his family, reprioritized his life, and really, ultimately, in the end, couldn't thank me enough. But, you know, I'm just the person, not that, you know, it's himself that's allowing that to happen. He's allowing himself to feel the change and to be open to it. And then from there, he told somebody else in the workplace, they asked for a message, another person asked for a message, and then at this particular time, my partner was taking what I had been writing, and he'd been typing, and he was taking it into work, and he was spending hours and hours reading what I was writing, and then somebody asked to read what he was reading, and the quasi-manuscript sort of went on this fine-out basis. And before he left that workplace, he was only there for a short period of time, the dynamics within that department had changed dramatically. And it was then that we decided, you know what, we need to write this book, put a soulful awakening together, and share it. Just share it. Like you said, one person can make it a big difference. And if one person listening to this right now gets something out of it and reads the book, listens to this interview, and takes one little thing away from it, and then they share that one little thing, we all know what that does. And that's really all this is about. This is my focus and my priority, and whatever little bit I can do is beautiful and perfect.
So, so your guides told you go and don't speak to JP, did they?
What's that?
This is how I got onto the radio, I have to say, is that that's what happened. The guides of a radio host, Rebecca Jernigan, told her to get me on her show. I was just a listener.
Wow.
That's where it all started.
That's amazing. Right, and that's just such a testament, right? That's just such a testament to the whole thing, and now here you are. I have a close friend who has a pretty amazing story. I'll just share it briefly if you're interested. He was felt like he needed to be on a spiritual path when he was younger, was doing something completely different, and he had a woman show up on his door, knocked on the door, he answered it. This woman spoke very broken English. She was from Germany, and she had been told by one of her guides that she needed to go and find this man. She was given his first name and last name and where he lived in the city, and she tracked him down. And the message that she was to deliver to him was that he knew the path that he needed to be on, and he needed to get on that path and focus on it. And from that day on, he's been involved in all sorts of alternative healing and energy work and that kind of thing. And he's never seen that woman again since.
Sometimes all it takes is an angel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, or a radio host, or a gypsy in the street, you know, who knows who, you know, it's like the least of them is often, you know, the most spiritual person, the most, like, humble little, you know, you don't call them tramps, we call them tramps, what do you call them, hobos? Homeless person.
Well, that's the thing, you never know where you're going to receive guidance from.
That's right.
And when you remove judgment and allow yourself to be accepting of what somebody has to offer, no matter who they are, you never know what you're going to get. I remember being on a bus, a local bus in Vancouver, heading to a concert when I was 20 or 21, and there was this homeless man sitting behind myself and my friend, and our first response was, well, you know, who's that stinky guy behind us? And, you know, like, we're young and kind of judgmental, you know, I'm ashamed to say, but that's what was going through our mind. And he started talking to us, and I felt myself kind of close up, and then I also felt myself release at the same time, and something was telling me, just allow yourself to be open to this guy. he's just another guy. He's just another human being. And so we ended up riding the bus for almost an hour and 20 minutes, and I had probably one of the most insightful conversations I've ever had in my life with that man. I've never seen him again, but I remember everything that he, it was like this angel dropped from the sky in the form of a smelly homeless guy on the bus, and really made me think and really evaluate certain things. So just be open to all possibilities.
That's right. You never know who you're talking to, especially if you're in a sense of like abusing them, because like anybody that you might like secretly abuse, because people do, you know, you might secretly just abuse someone, just little mean things that you might say or do to them, that person, imagine that person if they had a camera, if they were bugged.
Yeah.
Imagine what it would be like. That's probably the truth. And that's the bug that gets played on Judgment Day. You know, or whatever your concept of that might be. So.
And that's definitely a topic that could vary from person to person. I think that we're our own worst critics, to be honest, and I think that that's something that I try to emphasize with people too, is to not only stop judging other people, but to really stop judging ourselves. And when you start looking at the world around you as a reflection, your life is reflecting everybody else's life and vice versa, you really start to pay attention to how much you're judging yourself. Because when you judge yourself, you instantly feel compelled to judge other people because you're reflecting that back and forth, back and forth. And it's so easy to do, to be critical of ourselves because of so many different things. But, you know, even just growing up as kids, you know, people that have come and gone throughout our lives, it seems like everything or everyone at some point has some form of judgment that they've inflicted upon our life. No matter how nice and kind-hearted these people are that come into our lives, whether it's our parents, our teachers, our coaches, religious, what's the word I'm looking for? Religious
preachers, religious teachers, religious gurus,
gurus,
and priests, and other abusers. Yeah, sorry, other. Well, you know, essentially, we've found this that this, you know, whenever it comes into this master-slave, pyramidal, hierarchical relationship, that's when things start to go wrong, because, you know, again, you know, if only every victim had a camera, you know, and imagine that maybe every victim is a camera, and that somewhere along the line all of these things come back, you know, and that we have to just rely
on
that.
There's also, but there's also the potential to lead from, you know, like the Nelson Mandelas of our lifetimes and lifetimes before, there's that potential to lead in a completely different fashion. And, you know, a prominent message that's coming through, I incorporated a few of them in the book in one of the chapters of The Soulful Awakening called Times Are Changing. And it focuses on this concept that times are changing. Those old paradigms and belief systems of leadership are shifting and changing, and the ones that are so stuck on leading to power and fear and control and manipulation are going to find themselves eventually being left in the dust, because we're starting to catch on, and we're free spirits, the human race. We're free spirits. We might be able to get us to do things out of fear, but it's not long lasting. And this is where the spiritual evolution that we're talking about comes into play. Leadership is going to have to change and shift along with our consciousness that is also shifting. And personally, I can't wait for that to happen. I can't wait to see that and experience that. And it may be a slow, maybe a bit of a slow process, because as the light gets brighter, you know, the dark forces in the world will also start to rebel and feel that, and everything will sort of come to a head, and maybe that's happening as we speak.
Yes,
but eventually love will prevail and extinguish that fire, and then, you know, who knows how long down the road, but at some point eventually we'll be able to let go of leadership completely and be able to cohabitate and co-create and live in balance and in complete harmony with one another. And that's the ultimate goal. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. So it comes down to our individual choices on a daily basis. Which wheel do you want to be on? Do you want to be on the wheel of negativity, or do you want to be on the wheel of positivity? Which one? And for me, I'm as much as I possibly can, within the confines of being human and making mistakes from time to time, I'm trying to focus solely on adding to the momentum of this positive force that's going on.
So yes, we're talking about leadership. One of my concepts of new leadership is not the one who can command many, is the one who can listen to many and draw a consensus of what the group wants. The focalizer. So it's not actually somebody who commands the group, but one who serves the group.
And is willing to listen.
Yeah, it's the concept of synthesis, of being able to bring all the views together and realize that above all the layers there's a common goal that is the one to go for, you see. You know, everybody wants some kind of change, but what's the change we want? Well, we don't want this. Well, you know, there's lots of thises. And so the person who can focalize all the different people's grievances and solve them all by changing the model, that's the new kind of leadership.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's starting to happen. You know, you can see it, and there's businesses that are starting to adopt those practices. And speaking from a personal level, our business as a landscape company, that's our approach that we've always taken, even before this bike accident. It's just catapulted now. But our company is 11 years old now, and we still have ex-employees writing us letters telling us that although they've moved on, that this is one of the best places that they've ever worked, because we were inclusive and we engaged our employees in as many decision-making practices as possible. You know, we want your input. We want you to be able to express your creativity and your insight and your knowledge and your questions. And everybody works together. We still have four men and four women to lead and guide, but that leadership is trickled down from the top, my brother and myself, who implement these ideas of equality and inclusiveness. And I speak about in the book, one of the chapters, I speak about a school that I went to when I was younger in high school that was the complete opposite. There was no freedom of choice. There was no freedom of expression. The idea of speaking out of turn, per se, was completely prohibited, and that school caused a lot of conflict and it was abusive in that manner. And it's now shut down and part of one of the largest class action suits in Canadian history. And there's, you know, sort of help Facebook pages and whatnot for people to go to discuss their inner turmoil that was caused from that kind of, I don't even like to use the word leadership, but for lack of a better word, leadership. And that paradigm is disintegrating as we speak. And when it does completely, we'll be able to, at that point, really be able to take care of one another and ourselves at the same time, understanding that we're all one, we all originate from the same source, we live through the same source, and we return to the same source. And we have a responsibility to each other and to ourselves. And when I talk about ourselves, have a responsibility, within that, I also mean we have a responsibility to accept the fact that that it's okay to accept help from everybody around us. We live in this world, especially here, because this is my world, so I feel it here in Canada and in North America, where we pride ourselves on our independence. I don't need any help from anyone, I can do it all myself. Well, when we allow people to aid and assist us in our own lives, in whatever way they can, we in turn are giving them the opportunity to help, which allows them to show their love, and then from there we can do the same to our next door neighbor, or a stranger on the corner, you name it. We open ourselves up to be supported and to support at the same time. And I think that's a very important lesson to be learned, that yes, we are living our individual existence, but we're living it together as a whole.
Somebody described the soul as imagine a pizza, and everybody's, you know, nobody's too big for like the whole thing, you know, so everybody has a slice of the of the entire piece, you know, so like one soul may be acting out of maybe hundreds of people, maybe a few dozen. What's your experience in your communications with that kind of distribution essence? I mean, we are talking about, you know, potential multiverses and all sorts of things that could get a very complex story. So how have things come across for you?
In terms of what exactly?
Let me see if I can rephrase that in a way that how have things come across for you in terms of how they you see different layers of what is, you know, is this 3D, 4D, 5D kind of expression? That's not what I was talking about either. No. Yes, it's interesting. Sometimes I get hit by something, I got knocked off the air. There's wind, there's changed direction, all sorts of weird, strange little things happen when we're on these calls. In order to stop some of these really high level nuggets coming across, nuggets of wisdom and truth, so it still seems to be a battle, even though we have lots of good intent. So, for that reason,
so do you mean like how are things changing as far as becoming more multi-dimensional as opposed to how we previously existed?
Is exactly. Understanding that, well, we're stepping out of time. We're coming into a place where we're understanding the oneness of it all. And right. Understand. Oh, right. So yes, I was the pizza soul. Yes, the pizza pie soul.
The pizza soul.
Yeah, there we go. So the pizza soul theory. What do you
put
think of
that? Extra cheese on top.
Yeah, extra cheese. I'm the very cheesy bit.
Well, I think that in terms of, I think for a lot of people, it's a time of confusion. Trying to understand what's going on exactly and sort through the layers, sort through their feelings. I think when people, and this happened to myself, when people begin to wake up and see the bigger picture, it can create some inner conflict. Not saying that it's going to, but it can, because all of a sudden we're forced to look at our lives differently, and for the most part we're so accustomed to sweeping our problems underneath the carpet and just moving forward and pretending that they didn't exist, or sweeping our questions under the carpet, those questions we talked about earlier, the why am I here, those kind of questions, to avoid having to think about them. And when we begin to wake up, all of a sudden, we have a really difficult time ignoring that compelling urge to follow through with those thought processes. So there can be inner conflict. It doesn't need to be long-lasting, but I think it's important to allow yourself to go through those feelings. It's almost like what you go through to a certain degree when somebody dies. You're almost letting go. You're shedding a layer and letting it go. And once you've gone through that shedding process, it starts to feel really good. You're rejuvenated. You have fresh skin that's now exposed, but it's hardened off a little bit, and you can start putting yourself out there a little bit more and being okay with talking about these concepts and ideas that previously you may not have wanted to discuss before for fear of being judged. Now, what I'm finding in my own life is that I just talk about this stuff really almost to anybody that crosses my path that even shows a slight interest in it, or even maybe not show an interest at all, but I have a feeling that, you know, it's a relatively safe place to bring up certain concepts. And what I'm discovering is that more often than not, people are wanting somebody to broach these conversations and wanting to talk about the possibility of guides and angels and living an enlightened life and a more conscious, being more conscious in our daily lives and coming from a place of love instead of fear, these kinds of things. And to me, I found that really amazing, that here I was kind of living in this world where I didn't even really think that these were everyday topics, but maybe it's my hometown, I have no idea, but there are so many people that are living this kind of life and wanting to share and express that with others, and together we can shift through this process so much more confidently and with strength and empowerment if we allow ourselves to be open and free to discussion. So I don't know if that really answered your question, but I think ultimately, as we come to this place of recognizing that we're multidimensional beings and start expressing ourselves in that way, we'll get through that time of transition that can be kind of tough and get to a place of heightened awareness and accepting of all of us, including ourselves.
Well, and parts of ourselves as well, because, you know, I was watching a video earlier on about body consciousness, you know, and how a woman slimmed from all of this enormous person who didn't love herself to a really kind of skinny, slender, you know, muscular, perfect, and all that stuff. Woman who still didn't love herself. You know, it's just it wasn't that that did it. And we're often distracted as to what really is the thing that we need to do. And often we have to go through the lower idea of what that might be to get to the thing. Yeah, actually, I did all that, and it's still empty. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Because that's just you're just surface dwelling. When you're focused on solely on your looks and your material gain, and it's a presentation. What you're working on is a presentation to everyone around you. You're not working on your inner self, which is where your strength and your true empowerment comes from. You can have every toy you can imagine in the world and houses all over the planet and have every surgery imaginable to make yourself that perfect person that you're trying to present yourself as, but still have done no inner work, and your shell may look beautiful, but you could still be miserable inside. And, you know, that is really a simple concept. This isn't new information to any of us. The difference is, what are you going to do with the information? Are you still going to focus your attention on those external things? And if so, are you at least going to find a balance between the external and the internal? Or are you going to continue to strive for this perfect body and a perfect bank account, thinking that that's going to bring you fulfillment. What I'm proposing is that when you start from the inside and work your way out, the beauty that you will start to bring out through yourself to the world will be all that you need to bring everything that you're striving for to come into your life. It doesn't work the other way around, but it does work from the inside out.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I was thinking, is that it's been part of my conception for the last 15, 20 years of rebuilding myself. Well, 29 years, as that's when I had the crash. And every year another layer comes off. I have to deal with another layer of the pain that has been masked ever since then. So, but it's like getting my body back as well. It's a very long, slow process, but each layer gives a new lesson. So, in a way, it was like a kind of crash. Literally, it was a crash course. Boom, boom. Exactly. It was like a zip file download. Every year, you unbutton another layer, and you learn a whole bunch of new things, and you meet a bunch of new people as you revibrate to those particular frequencies. So, being cracked open like an egg. Yeah, nothing wrong with it.
Well, yeah. You know, and to realize that when you start peeling back those layers, you actually start to get to know yourself. You're taking off those layers that belonged to somebody else at some point in your life that may actually be a very poor representation of who you are. And I'll use an example of how something can be so impactful. When my son was in grade 3, he came home with this piece of artwork that he had done, and they were supposed to draw a picture of a hotel. And so he brought home what I thought was, I still have it on my fridge, and he's in going into grade 9. And I just loved it. I fell in love with it. And he had a pretty solemn look on his face, and his response to my response was, it's not very good. And I said, what do you mean? It's beautiful. Like, it's an amazing picture. And he said, no, I didn't get a very good mark on it. And I said, oh, well, what was your mark? And I think it was a 7 out of 10, which still, in terms of marking, is pretty good, I thought. But it was the
good
comment
enough for me, yeah.
That went along with it. Yeah, but it was the comment that went along with it that impacted him. And the comment was that she didn't think it was a very good hotel, because there weren't enough windows and this, that, and the other thing. And what he did is he took that as a direct reflection on his ability to create art. And it was like pulling teeth to get him to do any form of art after that. And it took years, like just probably within the last year, that he's actually recognized that he is a very talented artist. But because of one comment and one mark from one teacher in grade 3, had we not worked with him for the past however many years that is, I'm poor at math, many years, he may have gone his entire life thinking that he was a horrible artist. So when you start looking back at your own life and you think, you know, how many times do you say either to yourself or to somebody else, I'm not very good at that. It doesn't come naturally to me. Well, then you start thinking about where follow that back to its root origin, if you can. Why do you think you're not a very good artist? Why do you think you're not a very good athlete? Why do you think you're not very mathematical? Why did I just say that 2 seconds ago? I'm not very good at math. Well, you know, we do it all the time. And then even if you can't find your way back to the source, at least give yourself the opportunity to reverse that thinking and start telling yourself, I'm a great artist. I am creative. I am this. I am that. I can be anything that I choose to be. But what happens is, throughout our life, we're bombarded with all these ideas about ourselves that haven't come from ourselves. It's come from everyone around us. It happens all the time. It's part of our existence. But you need to start redefining who you are. What are your belief systems? Let go of everything that doesn't belong to you and bring back, or it's already there, it hasn't gone anywhere, but bring back into the light all that you are and all that you know you can be. And then you'll start really starting to explore your own potentials and move forward and experience growth in a magnificent way.
And it brings us, well, we're about 15 minutes towards the end of the show. And I want to say, first of all, thanks for being a sport. So you're going to have to find some way of punishing Steve, because he's he totally forgot. something suitably awkward and intense, the way that you felt when... You picked up the phone this afternoon. That's all.
Well, I'm sure he's busy making me a really yummy dinner or something.
I hope so. Like, with slippers and a bath.
Example.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, a bath would be good too. It's a prime example, though, of my initial thought was, how am I going to get out of this? Like, literally, I had crews coming and going. I was supposed to be the closing manager. I could have, you know, my reaction was, I don't think I can do this. I'm not prepared. I'm in the middle of, landscaping mode. And then I thought, no, okay. How bad can it be? I'm fine. I can do this. And here we are. And it's rising to the occasion, putting faith in yourself and those around you, and just not letting fear overtake you. And then you can get to almost every situation, if not every situation, that way.
Absolutely. Now, I just have to say that looking at the sun itself, just right now, if you look at the Soho cameras, and I'm just posting it on my Facebook, so I don't know if anybody can see this, that the sun looks like a fast forward symbol. There, it's like there's two chevrons going fast forward. So I'd say that it's a very auspicious thing. So where do you see yourself moving? I mean, what do you see in the immediate future? Have your guides, for instance, said, might be a good idea to move to, say, Colorado or west of the, you know, whatever? Or are you already there? Have you already made adjustments according to what they've said?
Well, the interesting thing is with the messages themselves from the guides is I would never receive a message that says in 2 years you're going to be living on the East Coast of Canada and you're going to be writing another book and have a little dog named Toto. Like, the messages that I receive, and it's probably because that's all I'm prepared to get, is ways, these little roadmaps that help you figure out where you're best suited to go. And through those messages, you become the determiner of your future, where you're going to go, by bringing awareness to your life, your state of being, your passions, your dislikes, your pleasures, those kinds of things. So I use the messages as a roadmap to self-awareness. And when I become more self-aware of my being and my surroundings, then my intuition and my innate self kick into high gear, and I just know I'll be led in the direction I need to go. I like to bring things back into sort of realistic terms. For example, tonight when you phoned and I answered the phone, Ladybug Landscaping, right? I didn't know it was going to be from a radio show host, and I'll remind Steve right now because he's listening, because he forgot to tell me. But generally at that particular time, this place would have been chaos where I am right now. I would have had 27 employees coming and going, but we had a bit of a rain day and some other weird things that happened. So literally I was walking through the door and the last person was walking out. And that's how things go in my life. And that's capable, that's the potential there for everybody's life to flow that way. So where I see myself in the near future is exactly where I am right now, which is working towards enlightening myself further and through the process helping others on their journey. And whether it's through the book, Soulful Awakening, whether it's through my website, stephaniebanks.org, whether it's through your amazing radio show or somebody else's radio show, or whether it's in the grocery store or the gas station. It's about recognizing myself as this amazing, beautiful creature on earth that is connected in every aspect to every other beautiful, amazing creature on the planet, and coming to a place where we grow and learn together so that we can all be nourished, all be loved, all be supported, and know that. And we are all the time from the unseen world. It's there. We are so supported, it's not even funny. But bringing that awareness to others is where I see myself today and tomorrow and the next day and the next day.
So, maybe you have your own radio show. So, in the last 5 minutes, have you got any salient nuggets for people? Because these are difficult times, you know. There's arguments breaking out all over the place. The answer is love. How does that work out?
In everyday life, it's about taking the little situations that we've talked about and realizing that the ripples that we create can turn into waves. And we can reach the far reaches of the planet through our love. And I know that may come across as being idealistic, but I really, truly believe it. People can be healed from a distance. We know this. This I think has actually been proven now scientifically, because there's a lot of work being done in this area. We can reach people in this way. Our energetic field is huge, and our potential to heal others through our energetic field is tremendous. So sometimes it's really overwhelming. And we look at what's going on to your city, to your home, and start affecting people around you in a positive light. And if that's how you determine that you can be a positive influence on the world, then that's all you need to do. That's it. It's all you need to do. And follow your passion. Do the things that make you happy while not stepping on everyone else's toes, but follow your passions. And then you'll become a happier person, you'll become in more alignment with yourself, and all these other things we're talking about will just start happening.
Lovely. And how does, once again, how do people get in touch with you? Can they get a reading? Do they get a kind of message? Is there a little place they can go to? And spell out your name very slowly so that people can hear it.
Yeah, they can go to my website, stephaniebanks.org, stephaniebanks.org, and the book can be ordered off the website. It's also available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Balboa Press. There's a non-Facebook. I have two Facebook pages, which is kind of weird. So if you go to one Stephanie Banks and there's nothing there, just search up the other one. I'm not very computer literate sometimes, so but I'm available for messages through my website and, you know, even just emails. I'm more than happy. Sometimes it takes me a little while because I'm super busy, but I'm more than happy to respond to emails if anyone has questions or just wants to throw an idea out there. I'm as available as I can be, and I encourage that.
So, thank you very much. This has been Journeys with JP. On Sunday, coming up next, I'll be having Tolek, the Andromedan Council representative. We'll be talking about the state of the planet in terms of the solar system. It's going to be really wild, I tell you. All right, thanks very much. Thank you so much, Stephanie. Bless your heart. And I'll send you the archive. Bless you. Bye now.